Hannah Warburton is a camera operator and a photographer, and those are pretty tricky occupations because she has a squint, sometimes known as a wonky eye or a lazy eye. It's meant that driving can be hazardous. It's led to at least one serious skiing accident and has some other curious implications too. But just as lockdown hit, Hannah had surgery to straighten her eyes. She and her surgeon, Julia Escardo-Payton from the Green Lane Eye Clinic, are here to chat to us about the condition and the surgery. Hi, guys.
Hi. Hello.
Hannah, can you tell me about your eyes in your own words?
So, essentially, ever since I was born, I have had a wonky eye. It took a while for my parents to realise that it was there, but eventually I was taken to the doctors and it was checked out. Essentially, I don't have both working eyes and they don't face in the same direction. Explaining in layman's terms, basically. Yeah. And because of that, since they don't work together, my brain actually suppresses my bad eye and therefore I don't see out of it, essentially.
Okay. Mm. And anything you'd like to add, Julia, as a consultant eye surgeon, about what's going on in, with Hannah's eyes?
Yeah, well, this is a pretty common condition. And if you have it as a child, since childhood, the brain sort of suppresses one image from the at a time, so people see out of one eye at a time, not both eyes together. If it happens later in life, then your brain doesn't suppress and you might get double vision. And there are things that that we can do to treat children and adults for it.
And we should point out, Hannah, too, that at least pre-surgery, you would be able to see looking at you that one of your eyes was looking in a different direction.
Yeah, definitely. It was quite noticeable before my most recent surgery. And it was definitely pointed out to me by various people. But since the surgery, the most recent one, it has improved quite a bit. It has drifted out again post-surgery, but it's not nearly as noticeable as it was before.
Okay. And you say that you can't see out of your, can I call your bad eye or your wonky eye. So if you cover the other eye, your left eye, do you just see black or what's the
No, so I'm not sure if it's the same for everyone with a wonky eye, but if I close my good eye, I can see out of my bad eye, but it's like having peripheral vision completely in that right eye. So it's very disorientating to use just my bad eye and it almost doesn't feel real.
Okay. What sort of effect did it have when you were growing up?
It had quite a few different effects. It affected me with sports, because my eyes don't work together, they actually don't have binocular vision, which helps my brain determine how far away objects are from me. And that became especially difficult with moving objects. And so trying to learn how to play sports that had balls moving towards you or trying to hit a target, I was terrible at it.
Softball wasn't the sport for you.
No, it definitely wasn't.
Okay.
Things like that. And even basketball, netball, rugby, I tried that for a season in year 13 and I could tackle people, but I couldn't catch the ball to save my life.
Okay. Julia, other impacts on people with this condition? What do you typically see? How is their life impacted?
Yes, well, if it's from childhood, a lot of patients won't even notice. But the depth perception is lacking because for depth perception, stereopsis, you need both eyes to be pointing in the same direction, and you need reasonable vision in both eyes. So, but if you've never had it, then it doesn't really impact most people. It may be picked up by accident or by chance, sort of if you go to a 3D movie or something and you can't see the 3D movie. But in life, day-to-day life, often it doesn't have much impact. Of course, if something happens to your good eye, then if you only have the other eye that's not very useful, then that is a big issue. And so if at all, we like to treat so that you have two good eyes, particularly in case something happens to the bad eye in future.
Mm.
Okay. And what was the other question?
How many people does this affect, by the way?
Oh, it's between 2 to 5% of the population.
Okay.
So it's pretty common. And like I said, if you have it from childhood, it doesn't necessarily affect people's function.
Mm-hmm.
But there is a big social impact. And so often patients will say to me, that their self-confidence is down. If they're talking to somebody else, that other person doesn't really know which eye to look at, and that can be a real issue. People that are going for a job interview feel that they might be disadvantaged, or people that are getting married don't want to appear in the photos of their marriage with a deviated eye.
Do you want to talk a bit about the social impact, Hannah?
Yeah, a lot of what you've talked about just now is I can sort of relate to. Like, a lot of photos, it's very obvious that my eye is out of whack, and that always made me a little self-conscious. And I've, in the past, not so much now, I've gotten a bit more confident and I learned to love it eventually, but yeah, in my younger, more teenage years, I was already a bit nervous about myself. And so seeing that in
everyone is, right?
Yeah, exactly. So I'm not special in that regard, but it definitely didn't help already feeling kind of average about myself as a teenager, that I could, I had such, like, a deformity, as people called it, to my face. It was hard seeing that and hearing that and seeing it in photos and knowing that it might never be any different.
It made your parents pretty protective of you.
Yeah, it could do. When I was bullied, I had, all my bullying was in my sort of childhood years. One of the treatment methods is an eye patch as a kid, and I wore that for a while at school, but I got bullied so horrendously that my parents, I think they ended up having meetings with the teachers and trying to figure out the best way to have me having an eye patch, and it ended up being that I couldn't wear it at school, and so I'd have to wear it at home. And even then, because of the impacts of the teasing as a kid, I didn't even want to wear it at school, and I don't even know how that would have helped my eyesight now if I had actually continued with that.
Yeah. Okay. It must make you a bit of a student of other people's behaviour, right? Like, you would see the hundreds of different ways people reacted to you. It must really say something about somebody.
Yeah. I don't mind if people would come from a position of just wanting to know more. Like, if somebody asked me, hey, do you have wonky eye? Like, what's that like? I've always been fine explaining it to them, but I've had a lot of people just go, what's wrong with your eye? And that's really weird, and have you got a wonky eye? Uh-huh. And it's just the bluntness can be so tactless, and I like to forget that it's there almost, but when somebody points it out so specifically and when you don't expect it, it can be quite confronting.
Yeah.
It's
a tough word, wonky, by the way.
Yeah, wonky.
Is there not a better word that we can use, Julia?
Well, there's often people call it the lazy eye. It doesn't sound quite as derogatory as wonky. But I think that I would like to make a distinction between there's two things that we're talking about here. One is that the eye is not pointing in the same direction as the other one. Mm-hmm. That's what we call, in layman's terms, squint, or medical terms, strabismus. And then there's something else called amblyopia, which means that The vision in one eye, sometimes it's in both eyes, but the vision in one eye is not as good as the other. So we've got amblyopia and we've got the squint. So, and often they go together, because the eye may be deviated because the vision's poor in that eye, or the vision may be poor because the eye is deviated. Okay. So there's two things that often go together, but not necessarily, where the vision is reduced in one eye and the eye is deviated.
Yeah.
And so the treatment of the eye that has a poor vision, so the amblyopic eye, the treatment is generally in childhood, because that's when vision is developing still, particularly the first 7-8 years of life. It's very critical to get the vision improved during that time. That's when the vision is still developing. And so that's when patching comes in. Well, first of all, you need to correct any refractive error. So if somebody needs glasses, are short-sighted, long-sighted, or there's a difference in the prescription of the two eyes, it's critical to treat that with glasses. And then if, despite glasses, there's still a difference in the vision between the two eyes, then you go to patching. Mm-hmm. And the patching, some kids tolerate it very well, some kids don't. Probably better to treat is better tolerated when the child is very young, because very young children, before they go to school, are less likely to bully. Mm. Once you get to school, that That's a real issue, bullying. Yeah. And so you wear the patch for several hours a day over the good eye to make the bad eye work, and that can improve the vision of the bad eye. There is an alternative to patching, and that's an eye drop called atropine, and that can, you put it in the good eye, and that can blur the vision in the good eye, again, to make the bad eye work. And you can give that alternate days or even just weekends, and that's that we can also use quite successfully for the lazy eye. Now, maybe that wasn't so popular back then, but that is something that we give, particularly if a child is not compliant with wearing the patch. The only thing is that the atropine is long-acting, and so it blurs constantly rather than the patch that you can wear for a few hours and then remove.
Okay. I'm speaking with this voice of Julia Escardo-Payton from the Green Lane Eye Clinic, and with her in studio with me is Hannah Warburton, who has a wonky eye or a lazy eye, and that's what we're talking about today. The medical term is strabismus, and we're going to talk a bit about what Hannah had done to straighten her eyes, or her eye. And growing up, Hannah, did you sort of have a hope that you might be able to get it facing in the right direction one day, and what did you know about those options?
Well, I remember with my first two surgeries, so I've had three total now, my first two surgeries were very young ages, so I knew that there was an option to do it, but I remember with my last surgery it wasn't very successful and I still had the drift, and so they said, come back when you've stopped growing and we'll have another look at it. And I didn't actually take that option, and I thought it would cost a lot of money and that it would take such a long time and that it wouldn't really have any effect on my eye, so I never pursued it until I went to get an eye check just on the offhand chance of that I would be able to do something, and they referred me to the hospital, and then that started the process. But it was, growing up, I didn't think it was an option, so I didn't really pursue it until much later.
So what were you booked in to have done before lockdown then? What was the procedure? And Julia can jump in if she needs to.
Yeah, I think you might have to, because going into that surgery, and even now I don't know the finer details of that because I didn't want to know about it. I was just scared.
Well, Hannah had an eye that was turning out, but she started life with eyes turning in. Mm-hmm. And so she had a first procedure to straighten the eyes so they wouldn't turn in, and then with time, one of her eyes drifted out. So the second procedure was to try to bring that one back in. That I can't remember whether that worked initially and then drifted out again, or didn't work from the start. So then I was faced with her eye that was still going out, and so but already two previous surgeries. Every time you operate, there is a bit more scar tissue, and so technically it becomes a little bit more difficult. Also, the results are a little bit less reliable than the first time around.
And I might usually just jump in, by the way, for listeners who are squeamish, I'm quite keen to go into the weeds here, so I'm just a warning. We will talk a bit about the surgery, which for some people will be tough.
I'd like to know the details now.
Well, let me tell you. All right, so, and this is what I tell all my patients, each eye has six muscles around it that move the eyes around. There's one, and they work in pairs. So there's one pair that move the eyes side to side, one pair up and down, and one pair obliquely. So if the eye is turning outward, then you want the horizontal muscles, the ones that move side to side. And so you've got six, you've got two of those in each eye. So altogether, you've got four horizontal muscles.
Yeah.
And so you can either work on one eye, so for an eye that's turning out, you can tighten the muscle that pulls it in towards your nose and weaken the one that pulls it out. Or you can also work on one muscle in each eye, meaning tighten the ones that pull your eyes towards your nose, and that's what Hannah had done. Or you can, strangely, you can actually operate on the other eye completely and tighten the muscle that brings it to the nose and weaken the one that pulls it out. And your choice of which muscles or how many muscles depends on how large the deviation is to start with, because every muscle that you move can give you a certain amount. You move them a certain number of millimeters depending on the size of the turn.
Yeah.
And so you need to operate on as many muscles as you need to achieve that reduction in the angle of her the way her eyes were pointed. And for her, and it also depends on which muscles she's already had operated on. So I knew that she'd already had the outside muscle in the right eye that had been turned outward. She'd already had that one operated twice. And so I wasn't keen to go for a third time in that same eye, in that same muscle. So I went for the muscles that pulls her eyes in. Mm-hmm. And because she'd had previous surgery on those muscles as a child, there was originally to stop her eyes going in, they had already been weakened. And so I just put those muscles back up to where they normally go right. to tighten them.
How are you doing there?
Good. Yeah. I'm fascinated because I didn't want to know anything going into the surgery that would freak me out.
I think
anymore.
People would understand that. Yeah.
Yeah.
And the other thing is that I don't know how squeamish I can get about this.
Yeah, go.
Very strict.
Go for it. Okay, fine. So when people have had multiple operations like Hannah, I already said that the results, so how much you move a muscle and what effect you get, gets a little bit less reliable mm-hmm. each time. So it's really good to do it with something called an adjustable procedure, where you, when you suture or tie the muscle to the globe, the eyeball, you put it on a loop or a little releasable suture. And so you do the surgery when she's completely asleep. And you,
good.
And God, then, yeah.
But then when she's awake, and usually I wait an hour or two, but you can do it sooner. When she's awake, you check and you see, well, did I get it straight or not? Did I overdo it? Did I underdo it? And if you didn't get it just right, you can put a lot of anesthetic drops on the surface of the eye to numb her eyes. So she can open her eyes, and then you can, with her awake, tighten or loosen that stitch and adjust it.
Is that what you did?
In Hannah's case, we did not need to adjust because it was good to, at that point, so it didn't need adjustment. But a lot of people do, and particularly if, and I use this when people have double vision as well, because there's often a fine little area where you can put the eyes where the patients won't have double vision. So because if it's a very narrow range of position of the eye where they don't have double vision and otherwise they do have double vision, mm-hmm. it's really useful to do an adjustable stitch because when they're awake, you can test to see whether they have double vision or not and put it where you want it so that they don't have double vision.
So just to be clear, because I was really wondering whether you actually had to, like, grab the globe, the eyeball, and actually turn it into the right place. But in fact, you're going for the muscle that does that movement. And if you tighten that muscle up, the eyeball will come.
Yeah, the muscles are attached to the white part of your eye, which is called the sclera. And they are, if you've never had surgery before, they're pretty set distances from the edge of the white and the front colored part of your eye. Okay. Mm-hmm. So you can measure back somewhere between 5.5 and 7.5 millimeters, depending on which muscle you're talking about. Mm-hmm. And that's where you find them. So you do have to, there's a little layer over the white part of the eye called the conjunctiva and another one called the tenons, which are very, very thin little membranes over the muscles. Mm-hmm. So you have to peel those back. Mm-hmm. To get to the muscles, and when you finish, you put those back in place.
Still with us, Hannah.
You don't take the eyeballs out.
Eye contact.
You do have to grab the eye and rotate it so you can get to those muscles.
You do. What do you grab it with?
Well, I use some locking forceps, locking little. Sorry, Hannah's getting a bit squeamish.
No, I'm loving it, but I also like. Ooh.
Yeah, so I use something called Moody's forceps, which are little. Tweezers with that lock, and you can grab the superficial layers and they stay on, and you just rotate the eye to the position that you need. Some people instead use sutures, like surgical thread, I guess is the word, as what we call it, sutures, to actually put through the part of the eye so mm-hmm. that it holds it, and then you use those to rotate instead.
Wow.
Have you got any questions at this point?
No, you have we have the saying, keep your eyes peeled, but my eyes are literally being peeled.
Yes.
That's
fine. Yeah, but I put the peeling back on.
Yeah, that's
okay.
Good.
Yeah. Okay.
So that's why they're so red afterwards.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hannah Warburton is in studio with me. She has had a surgical correction on her wonky eye, and I'm also with the surgeon who did it. You need steady hands?
Yeah, that helps, for sure. Not too much coffee on the day before, yeah.
Yeah. At what point in training to be a surgeon do they find out whether your hands are steady enough to do this thing? Like, is there a test or do you...
Well, look, it's not... No, it's...
And presumably quite fiddly, too.
Yes, it's not microsurgery. It's not like cataract surgery where you use a microscope. Some squint surgeons do use a microscope. Some use something called loops, which are little magnifiers that you put over your glasses use as glasses. So it's not microsurgery. It's not. I'm short-sighted, so I'm myopic. So I have progressive glasses, and those work very well for me. I could actually just as well take off my glasses and operate, but it depends on my refractive error. So,
but there are some people listening who would know they couldn't do this. So you know, just in terms of like holding your hand steadily, right? When do you find out if you have that talent?
No, for squint surgery, you don't need such a steady hand as for microsurgery. Right. I think if you have a big shake, absolutely not. Otherwise, it's fine.
Okay. So what was the outcome of the surgery? Was it a success?
I think so. Like, it was definitely, it's no worse than it was before. Straight after the surgery,
I know you. Yeah. So Hannah's a camera operator at 3, and that's how we know each other. Mm-hmm. And it's much better than before, right?
Yeah, definitely. It's much less noticeable. When my sibling first saw me after the surgery, they actually hated it because I didn't have my wonky eye anymore. And so many people said that it was like a part of my personality towards the end because I'd had it for so much of my life. But
how about for you, though?
Yeah, for me, I really like seeing myself with less of a wonky eye. Luckily, as I've grown, I've become much more self-confident, and I consider that very lucky that I do actually really like myself and how I look, even with a wonky eye. But, it was nice going into the surgery with a perspective of I don't mind if this doesn't get fixed, but I'm curious about whether or not it can be fixed. Yeah, I don't know if that answers.
What about from your perspective, was it a success?
I think... It was definitely a success initially. Mm-hmm. It looked perfect initially.
Yeah.
It has gone out a bit, not anywhere near as bad as it was.
It was, as I recall, Hannah, it was sitting right in, so it's your right eye we're talking about. And the coloured part of your eye was right in the outside corner of your eye. Would that be correct?
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, yeah. So, I think it looks very good. I'm a squint surgeon, so I can see that it has gone out again. Not to the degree that it was. So I think there has been a big improvement. I wish it had stayed straight. But it's the fact that Hannah, because her eyes have never worked together well, the brain doesn't have that tight control of keeping the eyes together. And so that is a bit disappointing, but it does happen. Now, if you have good vision in both eyes and both see the target together at the same time, then that will give you a better success rate of having the eye straight long term after surgery. And so that's why I know that Hannah had difficulty with patching and with bullying and all that. And I realize as a parent that would be probably very difficult to force your kid to wear a patch at times. But it is... If there's anything you can do to improve the vision whilst they're young and the vision is developing, that in the long run will help keep the eyes straight and need for less surgery. Mm. But
I imagine in this selfie culture, Hannah, it's nice to have photos where your eyes look normal.
Yeah, I've been dealing with it for a long time with photos, so with every aspect of my life that my wonky eye sort of affects, I've managed to find ways around it. But there are moments where I'm pretty disappointed that a photo is, well, in my eyes, essentially ruined because I can see that I have a wonky eye. So, yeah.
Can you talk to me about finding self-confidence? I mean, that is a real gift to be in a place where actually, great if it works, but you're not fussed. And there'll be people listening with all sorts of things about them that make them physically different. So anything you can tell us about what works or about your journey, pathway?
Quite surprisingly, I don't know if it worked for everyone in every situation, but a real turning point for me was with my eyesight and the confidence around my wonky eye was actually when I became friends with a guy called Brooks, who I also used to work with. He was actually one of the first people that made a joke about my eye that I actually enjoyed. As growing up, I hated people making jokes, but he was... We were working in a bar together and he came up to me and I didn't know him very well at the time and he said, Hannah, can I ask you a really personal question? Mm-hmm. I was like, oh no, what's this going to be? This is going to be super inappropriate. And he said, someone told me that you have a glass eye. Is that true? And that was really a turning point for me because I found it so delightfully funny that from then on I found it a way to laugh at it and started to appreciate it that much more because it was almost a part of my personality towards the end. So I don't quite know how to give somebody advice that I don't know about how to love themselves more, but I guess if it's there and you got to live with it, I guess, and learn to like it. And I was lucky enough to learn to like my eye in the end.
Personal question you don't have to answer, but has it affected dating at all?
No, I've been okay with dating, luckily. I've also met some pretty cool people that I have dated. But, yeah, it's affected my confidence going into dates, especially if it's sort of, I mean, I've dabbled in Tinder, like most people my age, and it's, yeah, presenting the photos that I don't have a wonky eye in, and then I was always really worried that I was almost catfishing someone because I did have one. So I was always, that was always in the back of my mind a little bit, like, oh no. But it was never an issue and it was never mentioned, and so I guess it hasn't really affected dating. I've just,
Hi, Julia.
I just wanted to make a point that Hannah has had three operations, but it's surprising that I see people who have never had an operation with a wonky eye. And I would say, absolutely, there's no reason not to try surgery or something to straighten that, because in a lot of cases, it's very successful and it's a life-changing thing. So, yes, if you've had three surgeries, then you might want to pause and hesitate about having another one. But if you've never had surgery or maybe had one or two, then go for it, because it can really help.
Oh.
So, you know, it is surprising to me to get people in their, you know, 50s or something coming for the first time. And I just think, why? They could have done something about it. So,
yeah, even though this latest operation hadn't had the perfect straight eyes that we were hoping for, it's made a huge difference to my life already, and not in most ways that people would probably appreciate, but I really appreciate them. And
good.
Yeah. So.
Good. Good.
Of all the professions you could choose, you're a camera operator and a photographer.
Yeah, I am. It's definitely probably not the best choice with a wonky eye, especially when a lot of cameras are built to use the right eye, and I can't very well. But it's something that I'm very passionate about, and so with things that I'm passionate about, I find a way to work around it. And
is there a connection between your job choice and your eye? Like, is that, did you do it out of spite, or just happen to be something you're interested in?
Sometimes stuff like that can be out of spite a little bit. It's like I'm not supposed to do this. I'm going to bloody do it.
Yeah, you're going to prove it.
But, yeah, that the job came from passion, mostly for me. But it's a nice little added bonus that I sort of beat that, and it is a little bit. It's quite rewarding to know that I can do the job even with a deformity.
That probably gives you more self-confidence.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's brilliant.
Okay. So if you've come in late, I've been talking to Hannah Warburton, a camera operator with a wonky eye that's recently been fixed. in surgery, and her surgeon, Julia Escardo-Payton from the Green Lane Eye Clinic. And if there's one moral of the story, it's learn to love everything about yourself beforehand. But if there is something that can be done, then it's worth having a go at. Does that sound a fair sort of summary of your journey so far? Thank you so much for both for coming in.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And Hannah, looking forward to seeing what you achieve, and thanks so much for your inspirational story.